it doesn't.
Never been so fun. Yeah.
It's never been so fun.
Check it out. Here we go.
I've been on the run. The shadow weighs a ton. It's starting to make sense to me. I can't
really make you love me.
No, no, you know I can't.
I'm on the run.
I've been on the run. My shadow weighs a ton. I know I found a recipe for me, but I can't
really make you love me.
Oh, no, you know I can't.
I'm haunted the overseas, haunted on each coast. Played them like Ebenezer, I made them see the ghost. Back from the future, Johnny the Japanese chemo knows. Even though the streets show love, try to see me grow. I often see me floating, but my shadow weighs a ton. Call it baggage, I use it all to advantage. I can't make you love me, this time it's on you. And you can't try to deny these words when they're true. I'm on the run.
I've been on the run, the shadow weighs a ton. It's starting to make sense to me.
I'm on the run.
I've been on the run. My shadow weighs a ton. I know I found a recipe for me, but I can't
really make you love me.
Oh, no, you know I can't.
Get to stepping, your tongue is like a weapon. This is Kevin from heaven, and yet so are ye. Since the age of 17, I've been taking part microphones. You've been taking part menu blown and throwing skeleton bones in the closet. Animal strike, curious poses. They feel the heat between us, but you need a woman. Glorious Steinem diamond defeaters, carry my fetus. I'm like the man in the moon. When we kiss, then you swoon on the run.
On the run, the shadow weighs a ton. It's starting to make sense to me.
Love
no,
me.
No, you know I
can't
really make you love
me. I've been on the run, my shadow weighs a ton. I know I found a recipe for me, but I can't
really make you love me.
Oh, no, you know I can't.
What up, what up? This is DJ Static from We Funk Radio, and I'm tuning into DJ Soulspin.
You are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM, and welcome to the show. This is an environmental radio show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Ryan Young, and you know, we cover environmental stories on this show, and we talk about things related to the environment, whether it be from a local perspective or a provincial perspective or a international perspective. And so, so we're here with you for the next hour. And we have a very special guest in the studio with us today, and that is Craig Sauve, who is a city councillor in the Sud-West Borough. His district is actually quite a long name. It's Saint-Henri-Est-Petit-Bourgogne-Pointe-Saint-Charles-Griffintown. Griffintown is the one that I associate the most with. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So how are you doing today, Craig?
I'm good, Ryan. Thanks a lot for having me on. It's a pleasure to be back at CKUT, where I was myself a radio host here for a few years on the Friday morning after, and I've been on your show, but it's been a while. I haven't been on your show, so I'm so pleased you invited me back. And yes, I'm proud to be the representative of the district with the longest name. I can say it fast. Watch. Saint-Henri-Est-Petit-Bourgogne-Pointe-Saint-Charles-Griffintown. I say it so much, yeah. All those four rich neighborhoods, rich with history and really interesting demographic diversity and all sorts of issues. So happy to chat with you today.
Nice, nice. And let's just quickly chat about your history at CKUT. So you used to host the Friday morning after, right?
Yeah, that was between 2008, I think, and 2011. I was an organizer with the New Democratic Party of Canada, And so I left at 2011 for the campaign to be in a, to be an official role, because I was a volunteer before. But I loved it. And I mean, you know, as a teenager, I grew up listening to CKUT too, listening to my first really out there music and experimental, all sorts of sounds. And obviously the news, the variety of news and culture that comes on CKUT, I think is super valuable. Still a donor, by the way, I always donate. And I think it's important. CKUT has had a huge part of my life. And we had a really good crew on the Friday morning after back in the day. My friend Ken McMurray, Josh was here, Amy Watson was here. It was a fun crew, and Tariq Jirbokian. I've met a whole lot of people. Sterling Downey, who's now a city councilor. I recruited him to be a city councilor, and it's because I met him here on CKUT.
I love it. And I'm a city councilor and I have a show on CQT.
it's a wonderful place. No, it's a great place to for information and discussion and good culture.
It is. And I've always known that you're a bit of a metal guy. Is that right?
Yeah. That's where I, in my teen years, I spent a lot of time making heavy metal and listening to heavy metal music and researching it. So I used to do maybe what I shouldn't have been doing. I used to put my cassette tapes into the ghetto blaster when I put it on CKUT, and I'd tape the CKUT episodes, and then I'd make mixtapes of my favorite tracks from the CKUT episodes. So there was a couple of good, like, heavy metal, ambient, industrial shows that I used to listen to religiously, and I still have those tapes lying around somewhere back home. But yeah, but also, like you, a huge fan of Queen, one of the greatest rock bands, if not the greatest rock band to ever face this this planet.
That's it. You're right on the money there. And interestingly enough, this coming Saturday is the tribute to Taylor Hawkins from the Foo Fighters.
Okay, right.
At Wembley in London, they have two tribute shows going on. One in Wembley, one in LA. And Brian May and Roger Taylor from Queen are playing at both.
Oh, good on them.
And there's also other cool people, Sebastian Bach and
Skid Row.
Yeah, and Geddy Lee and Alex Lifeson.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah.
Canada is well repped, and that's good.
That's it. So you should tune in Saturday. I think it's live streaming, all over the world, pretty sure.
To Taylor Hawkins, who left us too soon.
Yeah, and he was a big Queen fan. Huge Queen fan and huge Rush fan.
Oh, good man. Me too. I love Rush as well. So
That's it.
The progressive rock styles.
And from the city side, weren't you behind trying to get Montreal have a special status as a heavy metal city?
That's correct. Yeah, that was a motion that I had adopted, that I proposed last mandate. And it got adopted unanimously to recognize Montreal as a sort of hub of international heavy metal music, and that it's excellent in it. So I tried to throw some love also to the other Quebec areas that also have amazing heavy metal, because I think it's a Quebec cluster, but Montreal is very much the epicenter. So super fun. We had a lot of metal journalists and musicians came, and we played some death metal in the halls of City Hall, and my colleagues were pretty pretty shocked to hear it, but it brought a smile on everybody's face, because we don't often hear some technical death metal in the hallways of City Council. But that was really fun, and it's probably one of the things that got the most media worldwide last year in Montreal City Council, because metalheads are worldwide.
That's
and
it.
They're very proud of their music, and they're happy that a city recognized the music and talked about the heavy metal bands and the different types of heavy metal. So I mean, I was quoted in Brazilian, Portuguese, Japanese, Finnish, Indonesian media. It was unbelievable. It was really cool.
And that makes me think of that amazing heavy metal documentary, and that's this anthropologist, right?
Sam Dunn, yeah.
Yeah, Sam Dunn. And then he did a film about Rush, but his documentaries about metal are amazing.
Oh, yeah. And obviously, talking about the different cultural differences in metal, and there's a huge Indonesian scene that we don't talk about. There's the heavy metal that's coming from, the Islamic world, that's really amazing. There's political heavy metal, there's romantic heavy metal, there's something for everybody in there, and it goes from the kind of light rocky heavy metal to the most extreme sounds. And so he's done a really good job trying to identify and document these different scenes, but it is really rich and difficult to document all of it.
Wow, amazing. So you were first elected as a city councillor when?
2013.
So
this is my third mandate now.
Nice, nice. And I guess you said it before, but tell me what you like about your district, about your neighborhood.
It's a tough district to be a counselor for honestly, because there are like four neighborhoods within the district, you know. So you have a counselor for the Mile End, Maripluard, you know. It's the Mile End, you know, and it seems to have some sort of homogeneousness to it. Whereas the district I represent is four different neighborhoods, like Griffintown, which is going through the biggest urban redevelopment in Canada right now. You have Point St. Charles, you know, with a very strong community sector, sort of social justice issues, economic justice issues, really strong there, really well organized, and with an amazing history too. And Burgundy as well, with a very rich past, you know, some of the greatest jazz hubs in the planet came from Little Burgundy. And now you have some of the largest blocks of social housing in all of Canada. And so there's always been a lot of a lot of diverse peoples coming through Burgundy. It's known as, you know, the sort of the black diaspora's homeland and sort of in Montreal, and at least spiritually speaking, you know, the birthplace of the NCC, the place where the United Church is, the Union United Church. And then St. Henry, which was this sort of, it's sort of a mythological place as well, in the sense that, you know, the sort of worker history, francophone worker history that was so well portrayed by Gabriel Roy. And all these neighborhoods are going through changes, most North American cities post-industrialization are going through changes. And they all have really interesting cultural and community hubs. And so there's so much going on. There's so much organizing going on the ground within each neighborhood that you sort of have to follow the four neighborhoods and be involved in all four. So it's super fascinating. And again, the history I feel is a little bit of a weight on my shoulders that I try to carry with respect. Because, you know, I wasn't born in any of the neighborhoods. I was born, you know, in the suburbs. But I've lived there since I'm 17. And I see the history on a daily basis, and the people that are, you know, third, fourth, fifth, sixth generation in their neighborhood, and they talk about, you know, how their great granddad worked at this rail workshop, or their great grandma was a community organizer in this church, and it's amazing to feel it. You know, you think about places like St. Columba House on Grand Trunk in the Point. I mean, it celebrated its 100th year anniversary of community involvement. I mean, that's amazing. 100 years already. And they're still going really strong today. The needs are still there. So it's super fascinating to work in these districts. And
then you have some trendy restaurants now, like Liverpool House and Joe Beef, right? That's your district?
It. Yeah, you know, the canal was very much an industrial hub. It was the cradle of industrialization in Canada when it opened in the 1820s. We're about to celebrate its 200th anniversary. And then it was closed when we opened the Seaway in the 70s. And then it sort of reopened again in the 2002, but as like, you know, park space, historical space, and people see how beautiful it is and how lovely it is with the grass and the trees and a little bike path and stuff like that. And I think it attracted a lot of attention. And so over the history of the last 20 years, and again, proximity to downtown Montreal with its universities and employment hubs, people have really moved into the Sud-West and seen a lot of development. So that's caused tensions as well, you know. So we do have some of the coolest restaurants and really great cultural hubs and places to go hang out, museums. But there is also this, you know, this transformation of the new populations moving in with the old populations, and they're seeing, you know, the rent prices have been spiking over the last 10 years. That's been a major concern for us. And obviously, you know, some of the community services too, and some of the stores were just private stores, you know, that like friperies and stuff like that can't afford the new commercial rents, and so they're going. So people who are of lower income may not have access to all the things they might have had access to 10 years. So, you know, you try to take the good with the bad and recognize where we have to work. And to me, housing is number one. I think that's one of our big issues that we hear in the borough. And it's, we hear it all over Quebec, and I'm thankful that we're talking about it all over Quebec, but it's been an issue in our borough. And so, the building of social housing cooperatives and community housing has been absolutely one of our major priorities. And that's long, and it takes a lot of money, and you got to go begging for money from Quebec. And, it's not been coming. It's not been, the taps are not open for social housing money from this current government, nor from the last one. So we really had to fight for every piece of land that we can buy, and then put some housing on top of it. So it's there's a lot of challenges in this borough. As much as I love it, I also see the challenges in my day to day. You know, that's what I focus on a little bit.
Nice. And then, of course, I guess so far it's not become a big issue in this election campaign, this provincial election campaign that is underway now, right?
Well, you know, they're talking inflation. Right. The rents have been inflating pretty heavily before the pandemic, and I'm happy that it's getting some more attention. But you know, there are people that are really on the edge. You know, it's only you know, about $760 for your, if you're on social aid, for basic social aid assistance, $760. That's not a lot. You know, it's not covering the rent for most people. So if you don't have access to a place that's affordable social community housing, you may be really struggling to try to buy food, to pay for internet, the basics that a lot of us take for granted that help us just function on a daily basis. So I'm hoping that that housing does become a big issue. I'm waiting to see what the parties are going to see, what they're going to say. And, you know, with the CAQ, they're leading so much in the polls right now. There's a likelihood that they'll be the government again. So I want to see some pressure on them to deliver and to make some promises this time, because it's been disastrous. They've really done almost nothing for housing in Quebec, only in emergency situations and only when the pandemic was there and they felt the need to show Quebecers that they cared a little bit about them, that they actually took out some money that the feds had already given them. So I'd like to see a little bit more from a hell of a lot more from the CAQ.
Okay. And in terms of the environment, since, you know, this is an environmental radio show, what are some of the green things that you may have been involved in, or that you know that the city is doing that you support? Or
one of the biggest, I think, initiatives that I don't think we celebrate and it doesn't get media is all the purchases of green space that the city's been doing. We hear a lot about the Grand Parc de l'Ouest, the Greater Western Park of Montreal. These are like tens of millions of dollars that the city is investing in to conserve some of our last natural green spaces on the island of Montreal. There's not a lot. We've developed a lot of Montreal. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of natural flora and fauna there. It's an ecosystem that is delivering a lot of services to all of us via, you know, insects, wildlife diversity. It's a sponge for some of the flooding that we're going to face even more of. And we face some really awful floods in the west, on the northwest of the island. And so we're buying a lot of land to try to conserve it. And I think that's super important. And it's very expensive. It's not as flashy as, you know, opening up a new square or, you know, having a big party downtown. But it's hyper essential. It's fundamental. And so we're also trying to transform other spaces into green spaces. And one project that the city is launched, and it's going to take about 20 or 30 years, is a sort of like this whole green-blue way. So trying to have sort of green pathways all throughout the city that leads from one major park to another, so that you could walk or ride your bike surrounded by green. Imagine like a green pathway where there's trees everywhere, maybe some fruit trees so you can pick a fruit that are cool and very beautiful and provide excellent space for natural wildlife and flora. And walk from maybe Parc Angrignon to the new park that's going to be in the Turcotte Yards, go along the Falaise, arrive at Meadowbrook. And we want to deploy this, you know, across the city. So whether you're in Rivière des Prairies, Saint-Léonard, Anjou, Île-Bizard, West Island, we want to be able to have this greenway that you can walk with all over the island. And so that's going to be a lot of purchasing of land, making deals with partners like Hydro-Québec that have a lot of these interesting sort of pathway under electric lines. This is a major conservation project. And it's, I think it's designed to to help Montrealers see the beauty of green space and the quality of life that it provides at the same time. So I think in 20 years, when this is more and more developed, because we're just doing chunks here now, we're buying things when they become available or when we get a good deal or after negotiating. But once this thing starts to be put together, it's going to be something I think that people talk about worldwide. I don't know of any other city that has such an ambitious plan to sort of connect green space with green space. Mm. So that's something that's really interesting. And I know they've plotted it out and I've seen maps, you know, but they're confidential because there's real estate, you know, purchases that need to be done and stuff like that in order to make it happen. So basically, I think there's a very strong orientation in our city right now to purchase and conserve the last green spaces that exist and try to convert some brown space into green space where we can. So I think that's a really positive thing that's happening right now that, you know, like I said, we're going to hear more and more about it, but it's a massive project.
Nice. Yeah. And I know that Montreal is known as a bicycle friendly city. Do you know, can you recall what maybe has transpired since you've been on city council related to that? Or
yeah, that's, you know, I think you got to give credit to, as much as I was their adversary in the past, to Union Montreal for sort of starting, getting the ball rolling in as a political party, you know. Yeah. Trombley, and I think André Lavallée, who recently passed on, actually, who was really well known to be the creator of Bixi Montreal, or at least the politician that shepherded it into Montreal. And, you know, credit where credit is due, the activists who fought since the 70s on the ground to get bike paths and to secure, you know, street ways. And there wasn't a lot done, however, until about the year 2004 or 5. And I remember the De Maisonneuve bike path, which we take for granted now, not too far away from here at CKUT Studios. There was a huge fight over that. It was a massive fight. It was going to destroy downtown, Ryan. Did you know that? It was going to destroy it.
There you go.
All the businesses were going to close. They're all going to move to Laval. The Maisonneuve, close up shop. That's what it was back in the day. It was crazy. That's what they're saying to, you know, Gérald Tremblay and André Lavallée. But they did it anyway. And it was like, I think, Montreal's first really long, secure, lovely bike path. And, you know, after that, there wasn't a lot. We did a little few things. And I think there were some boroughs that were trying to take the lead, notably Plateau Mont-Royal and Rosemont. But when the city controls the arteries, because that's how it is in Montreal, the main arteries are controlled by the center city and the boroughs don't control those spaces. So they can't just put a bike lane, let's say, on Boulevard Saint-Laurent if they wanted to. They're just not allowed to. So it takes that center city, that the mayor of Montreal, to really get behind it. So I think Valerie Plante, as being the mayor now for on her second mandate, she really pushed the administration to develop a plan of what we call them REV bike lanes, which are these, they're supposed to be like high quality, two lane in each direction, secure bike lanes, beautifying projects, and to take up space on arteries so that we can actually have clear links. Because if you look some at the bike path maps in Montreal, right, it's sort of like these non-connected, weird, circuitous little lines on a map. Well, we need these. We need direct lines, sort of. And we've used the phrase the sort of the highways of bikes. But it's sort of in a sense that we want these bikeways. So the first one was done on Saint-Denis. And again, we were going to destroy Saint-Denis. Everybody was going to move out. The plateau was going to fold. And in fact, there's been more businesses that have opened along Saint-Denis because it's calmed the traffic down. It's calmed the noise down. And it's, you know, funneled tens of thousands of cyclists every week along that little way. So that's the first one. We're building an east-west one in the south and southwest to Old Montreal. I know they've developed one on Belle Chasse. And they developed one from Mercier West in Mercier-Chalais-Maisonneuve, trying to bring it down to the plateau and the center city. And I know there's plans for a northern east-west one and a sort of west of the mountain, north-south. And, you know, that just at the last city council, we bought some land in order to make along Donegany in Pointe-Claire, because there's some unconnected bike paths around the train stations, around Cedar Park train station and others. So we're trying to make those connections and make these really long quality paths. So this year, I know it's been a year of hiring and planning. And I think next year we're going to see some real big deployment of a bike path. And there's going to be huge fights, like there is all the time, because, you know, privileged is going to be challenged. I like to park here. I like to have two lanes on this and the street in this direction, and things will change. But I think we'll see some good deployment of bike paths come next year and the years after. And so we've seen with that and with Bixi, like a skyrocketing of cycling. Right, we're talking about 50,000 Bixi uses per day now, 50,000 rides just on Bixi. So that's a lot of bikes. That's a lot of bikes being moved. And then there's all those other cyclists who have their private bikes. And then there's the electric-assisted bikes, what I've seen senior citizens use, or young people use them as well. So it's really exploding. And even winter biking, we're seeing it every single year. There's more winter cyclists out there. So,
And in North America or in the international world, I mean, I know Europe is often bicycle friendly as well, but do you know, like, or do you ever hear just from being on the inside there on city council that we are well respected or that we're doing things that other cities are not? Or
I think within the North American context we're well respected, but I don't think we can rest on our laurels. I mean, there's a lot of competition because a lot of cities are also waking up to the fact that cycling is a super efficient way of moving people. It's inexpensive in terms of infrastructure. You know, those SUVs and trucks and all that, they tear up the roads. Like, they are heavy. So the asphalt gets torn up, and cars, you know, are also very heavy. But little bikes aren't heavy. So you don't get as much wear and tear on those lanes. And you know, it costs so little. It's healthy. There's zero emissions. I mean, it's win-win. It's not loud. You know, and even electric cars, when they come, they're going to be loud because the noise comes more from the displacement of air than it does from motors humming. So all these cities are seeing these advantages, and so they're moving fast as well. I think New York City, got to give them credit. New York City's been doing a lot for cyclists. Toronto is moving fast with cycling lanes too. It's not the same dynamic. I think they have to, it's a little more fighting, but there are some interesting cycle projects there. I know Kingston has some really interesting urban planning going on these days. New parking rules. They're trying to free up a lot of space so they can do these initiatives. So I think Montreal has to forge ahead. We've been given props as North American cycling city because the cyclists are there. The critical mass is there. But we need to get, you know, the West Island connected to Pointe-aux-Trembles. From Ahuntsic down to, you know, Nuns Island, we need solid bike paths all over the place, and we need them to be there 365. And we need to have the traffic lights that are timed for cyclists and the traffic lights that are securing cyclists. So all of this infrastructure is being built, and as long as we keep forging ahead, we'll keep being world leaders. And we are recognized right now for our leadership. But again, so other cities are moving fast. So if we just stick where we are, we'll be trailing behind pretty soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. So in terms of being a city councilor, I guess during the pandemic, you know, you did a lot of it online. Now you're going back to in person. I think you were mentioning to me when we were chatting before that there's less people coming to the council meetings. Mm. Is it true?
Yeah, I think it's starting up again. I think you know, a lot of habits were broken because of the pandemic, and people are not aware all the time of how things work. So there are the regulars. You probably get them in St. Anne de Bellevue.
Yeah, for sure. Every week. Exactly. Yeah.
It's like this Mr. Sauve comes back every week and he wants this trash picked up, and he wants. We get those too. We get the regulars too, and some of them haven't come back. You know, they still are on Facebook and Twitter and stuff, but people are starting to come back slowly. But you know, at City Hall used to have, you know, sometimes 100 people in Montreal City Hall waiting for tickets to win the lottery to ask the mayor a question. And now you don't really have to stand in line. You know, you can pretty much get in guaranteed because, you know, only 10 people are showing up. So.
Hear that, activists out there.
That's it. No, come ask us a question and we're there. And, you know, I like to try to chat with people outside the hallway after question period or before question period a bit and just see what they're what they're up to. So come by and say hi anytime. You know, I think it's the best way for us sometimes is to get information directly from people and not just say, oh, my public works director told me. It's like, no, I like to be on the ground and see people and I like to talk to people. So come on down to Montreal City Hall or your borough council. You know, I'll tell you, I don't know if about you, but I wish they could do that at the provincial and federal level sometimes, because I feel they're sometimes far further away from the population.
They are.
We get.
They're behind their big, you know, stone fence or whatever it is. You know, yeah.
Like you guys are, you got the 20 that's like separating you and the 40, I guess, eh?
That's right.
St. Anne and Bellevue. So anything around there, you need the federal and the provincial government, right?
That's it.
You can't do it on your own. But cities, the citizens going to come to your city council and complain, probably.
Yeah.
But you're like, I can't.
Yeah.
It's not my land. I can't do anything next to the 20.
For sure.
These frustrating things. And so with us, it's the canal. You know, that's Parks Canada.
Right.
So,
and we have a canal that's Parks Canada as well.
Oh, that's true. You have the Parks Canada locks there and stuff too. So
yeah.
A lot of stuff that we don't control that we wish maybe our federal MPs or provincial MNAs were a little more present, or that citizens would have a better way to contact them.
Absolutely. And you're not in the city hall still now because it's being renovated. Is that right?
Yeah, we're in what used to be the Superior Court of Quebec.
Okay, which is a beautiful building, right?
Yeah, it's actually older than Montreal City Hall, so it's a stunning building. Actually, it's bigger, but the one thing is that the City Council chambers used to be the courtroom.
Okay,
and there's these big pillars in the middle, so I can't see everybody in City Council.
Ah,
it wasn't made to be a parliamentary place of exchange. So that's one thing. But I mean, it is a beautiful old building and. We'll be there until like January 2024.
Wow. Okay.
So it would have been a good four to five years of renovating the old city hall. Well, the true city hall,
right.
Which itself is also a gorgeous building built in, I believe, the 20s after the big fire. So it's being perfectly restored. It's going to be like LEED plus. I don't know.
Oh, nice.
Probably gold or platinum to be like a very much, you know, an influence and saying, look, we're getting our act in gear. So other people, we want them to get there.
And do you know how they're getting it up to a LEED standard? Like what some of the features are?
I mean, in terms of like energy conservation, water conservation, ventilation, all these things are being thought of.
They're not installing like geothermal or anything.
I don't think they're doing geothermal. No.
Okay.
So there are, it is a, you know, it's a heritage building.
Yeah. There's certain things you can't do.
So there's certain things you can't, it's not like building from scratch where we can say, oh, it's going to be all windows on the front facing walls so that we can catch all the, you know, solar warmth in the morning. Like we just can't do that. But the windows are going to be top level and, you know, insulated to the 10th degree. So we lose less on heating or air conditioning, things like that. Everywhere we can make a gain, we've made a gain. And on the ground floor, what used to be some offices and a sort of like a pell-mell of activities, it's going to be all for the citizens. So there'll be a museum.
Oh, wow.
There'll be a cafe.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, there'll be like meeting rooms and stuff like that. So the idea is to really invite people into City Hall. So that's a really cool move, I think, as well. So, and back in the day, there was like a two or three benches, you know.
Right.
So you couldn't really have too many people in there. And now it will be a lot more welcoming for the citizens to come in.
Hmm. And then when you build new buildings, I guess you're always choosing LEED or green building approaches, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And fully universally accessible all the time. So buildings are a lot more well-conceived now. And the materials last longer. And, you know, in public buildings, they're not like people's homes, you know. So something as simple as the front door of a public building, right? It gets slammed around all the time, you know. Kids are walking in and out. People are just like slamming the library door, the pool entryway door. So they have to be made strong, you know. They have to be made really sustainable for a long time and easily maintainable. So that also is another effect. So a lot of window space, a lot of good materials, really energy efficient, water efficient, green as much as possible. We're not building these big parking lots around it either. We're greening everything around. And even green roofs were possible too. You'll see these kind of things going on at the STM as well.
Nice.
Yep.
Well, we're talking to Craig Sauvé, and he is a city councillor in the city of Montreal for the borough of Le Sud-Ouest. And I'm not going to say his entire district name, but includes Griffintown, because people know Griffintown and they know Saint-Henri. Saint-Henri Est is also in his district name.
Point Saint-Charles, Burgundy.
Point Saint-Charles, I know, Burgundy. I know.
These are good.
Well, that's
CQT
it.
I guess
that's it. Petite Bourgogne is Little Burgundy,
Little
right?
Burgundy, yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. So we're going to continue talking to Craig Sauvé, but we'll take a quick little break for some music, maybe some messages, and we'll be back after that. And I thought, well, you know, I should probably play some metal while we're here. And I think I have some Ozzy Osbourne queued up here. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
We'll be right back.
And we're back. You are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. And that was I Don't Know by Ozzy Osbourne, featuring the late, great Randy Rhoads on guitar. And yeah, so that was enjoyable to play that, even if it's not something you might typically hear on CKUT.
Devil horns to you for that one. Big devil horns.
So we're here with Craig Sauvé, who is a city councillor in the Sud-West Borough. He's a well-known environmentalist, was a community activist before he was a politician, and all-around good guy. And
God bless you, YouTube.
I guess we've been talking about many different things. I guess maybe I haven't really asked Craig about, you know, frustrations when you're a city councillor and how certain things, like, I know for myself, I'm a city councillor in St. Anne de Bellevue, and sometimes it seems like I'm banging my head against the same old brick wall when I want to, you know, introduce some new green feature. And of course, many things are now becoming a second nature, you know, like we don't have to fight for these things anymore. You know, for example, like compost pickup, I had to fight for that to get that introduced in my town, but now nobody bats an eye about it, right? But what would you say to that?
I think it's one of the major, it is a lot of frustrating for politicians like you and I who are really in it to change the world. I think a lot of politicians are, quite honestly, and a lot of them work in good faith. And we meet with scientists and urban planners and, you know, transport engineers and people that have, like, studied this stuff extensively. And there's consensuses about certain practices. And then when we put them into place, there's resistance. And even if we do a consultation sometimes, then people aren't aware of the consultation. The consultation's done. It's favorable. You do the thing. And then people get mad after you do it anyway. So that's definitely a big frustration. And when it comes to, you know, global warming, and the climate crisis we're facing right now, it's imperative that we change a lot of things. Like a lot of our processes, a lot of the economy, a lot of our day-to-day things. Not to put the back on individuals, but even if we were to make the legislative changes above, things trickle down and force us all to make changes. We've seen, you know, just a pandemic, 2 years of that, inflation through the roof, right? So what happens if we're going to legislate one day tar sands? Hey, things are going to change. We're all going to feel it. So I think there is a realization that we're all going to have to come through, that things are going to have to change and something's going to have to give. And so even when it's sometimes small things, it makes me wonder if we're going to get there, you know, like putting in the bike path, you know, like De Maisonneuve was going to die. It didn't. But, you know, that was huge. Lots of articles that were going on, huge resistance. And, you know, sometimes I remember we did a little vélo rue, a little small little bike road. We put some little benches and we put green plants and put some murals and we put some paint on the ground. And it was a really neighborhood street, island street in the Point. People were up in arms and they put signs up on their balconies against it. And we had done numerous consultations, numerous community meetings. And it was just one little road, you know. I think when we start to work within people's daily lives and they change them a little bit, there's a sort of an automatic human resistance to say, oh, the things that I normally do might change, and I don't like that. That's what we call privilege, right? Privilege to park, privilege to pay as little as we do for things sometimes, or privilege to have all the things we have. And I think some of those privileges are just going to be pushed out of the way by the upcoming climate crisis. So I think the best thing we can do now is to take as much change as we can now, and then have to pay less bill later. Because if it happens all at once, there will be, you know, a lot of conflict. That's what, imagine if we'd started working on the climate in 1990, huh?
Well, I guess we sort of did, you know. I mean, we did, yeah. They started to talk that way in 1990, and then but government inaction lasted for so long, you know. And then there was a shift eventually, a positive shift in terms of those things. Yeah.
We're getting there. I mean, you know, yeah, composting, recycling.
Yeah.
These are big changes for people. I got to wash my cans and I got to separate the paper. What the hell is that?
Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about recycling because, you know, at some point we heard in the news that China was rejecting all of Canada's recycled trash or whatever it's recycling. Do you know what the current state of affairs is in Montreal? Like, are certain things like, you remember that there was a glass factory for recycling glass and then Quebec closed it. I think Quebec was subsidizing it and then stopped subsidizing it and it closed down. And then my understanding was for quite a long time, glass was not being recycled. I don't know if it's still that case. Do you know?
It's a huge question indeed. You know, we do have triage plants and recycling plants in Montreal, and there are not a lot of bidders to run these things. And so sometimes the company can get a bid and not go through all the proper processes or and you know, stuck because they've signed a contract and nobody else is bidding. So what are you going to do? So the city of Montreal has been working very ardently on the recycling file. But the strategy, I'd say, and this is the most important thing, is to do reduction. That means reducing at the source the amount of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think we need as a society to get a little bit more aggressive on that. And I say that federally, provincially, and municipally. And a recent thing, and again, this caused a lot of strife, is banning Publisac. And I want people to be, you know, have access to coupons and stuff. But at the end of the day, we know that like over 85% of these Publisac are not even being opened. They're going straight into the recycling bin. So we ban them. You know, and that's coming in next year. And I know we talk about straws aren't going to save the environment, but I think that's a piece. We need to start looking at all packaging. You know, most of the stuff that's in the grocery store is packaging. It's pretty nuts, you know. So I think we need to go towards that. There's a move to try to recycle clothes in Montreal or to refuse the dumping of unused and unbought clothes. Because a lot of, you know, fashion design, a lot of companies.
Fast fashion, they
fast
call
it. Fashion, yeah. Like, I was looking for the words.
Yeah.
You know, it's not sold, so boom, right to the dumpster. And at least can we give that to, you know, some fripperies and secondhand clothing stores and some places where it might be needed. So I think we have to act a little bit ever to do reduction. And so that the big sort of waste management plan is very much focused on reduction in Montreal to try to reduce the source. And you know, composting is a big piece too. We've had the biomethanization plants and compost plants that were a bit delayed, but things are going forward now. And
so you think those are going to see the light of day?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay,
so we do already have composting service. Some of it was going to other places, but some of it's being composted here, and it's useful. And we're able to in our boroughs as well to sometimes use the compost that we make and distribute it back out in the spring for gardening. So that's interesting. And, you know, some people compost in their backyard. I'd say do that as well. That's even better because there's no truck coming to pick it up.
Right.
If you can, if you have, you know, if you're in a community and you're in a big building and you have some space in a yard around you or whatever, compost together and put it in your local garden. Donate to if there's a local community garden, donate to them. They'd be happy. So there's ways that we all, I think, can reduce what's going into the dumps at the end of the day.
It also seems that the current administration is supporting urban agriculture in a big way. And of course, even out where I am in the West Island, there are some farms, some organic farms even. And it seems like Montreal is putting some funds and some, you know, more, you know, and some, I guess, support, political support behind those kinds of operations.
Absolutely. I mean, they even started with the Jardin Botanique, the botanical gardens. We're doing some agriculture. We're trying to help boroughs deploy as many urban gardening as possible. Sometimes it's in the collective form where we all take care of one garden, or sometimes it's in the allotted form. And sometimes, you know, in denser neighborhoods, though, that land is expensive to buy that land. But we do. And we're creating more gardens. We just opened one in St. Henry just this year. So happy to see it. It was an empty lot forever. And we've converted it into, like, there's a big collective garden, and it's a lot of space, like half the size of the park, and the rest of it's microforest.
Oh, nice.
They're also looking at, you know, when I was mentioning that sort of the green alleys around the whole island of Montreal, they're looking at making, like, sort of nutritive alleys as well. So having, like, fruit trees along those things.
Mm.
So if, you know, you're jogging, it's like, oh, I can pick up a fruit and, like, take a break and eat, you know.
Nice.
So we're trying to find ways to deploy urban agriculture everywhere. And I think we're going to need it because, again, with climate crisis, we're going to need all the land we can get and all the land that's arable land and all the food because, you know, we eat a ton that comes from outside of our country, outside of our region. So we're going to need to rethink all of that.
I remember many years ago back, you know, before there was any kind of a hype about these things that, you know, there were various cities in Asia that, you know, where they grew 80% of the food that they ate in that city, you know? And of course we have not as long of a growing season or whatever, but definitely we could grow more of what we consume in this city.
Absolutely. Know? And I think maybe educating ourselves on what's growable here, how to make it last through the winter, you know, through fermentation or other things like that. I'm thinking of cabbages and I don't know, potatoes and cucumbers and pickles. And I don't know.
For
these
sure.
things, there's a lot of work we can do as well, and maybe refine our palates to have, you know, tasty local treats that we may disregard.
For sure. So, and then when it comes to, we've talked about greenery and stuff. When it comes to planting trees, I know, you know, Montreal's made some pretty big commitments about planting a certain number of trees within a certain number of years. How does it work in your borough? Do you have are you always kind of looking in on your progress from that perspective? Or
absolutely. The borough counts how many trees it cuts and plants every year. We want to always have net growth.
And you've got the emerald ash borer that killed all these ash trees, so then that's an issue for all of us, right? So
we were pretty much at around zero for a few years because we lost so many ash trees. And in Villemal, in Côte-Saint-Paul, in the southwest borough, has an inordinate amount of ash trees. Pointe-Saint-Charles as well. We lost a lot, you know. We did have a strategy to vaccinate trees and to pre-kill them, what they call it, called the slam, to pre-cut them down and then, you know, put in a new type of tree in order to diversify the tree portfolio and the tree canopy. But we do have net growth now, a couple hundred trees per year, and we're starting to engage more and more in the idea of microforests. I think, you know, in urban planning back in the day, having these little urban forests was seen as like unsightly, potentially dangerous. Whereas now it's seen as beautiful and providing oxygen and other ecosystemic services. So we're planting along the highways in the Sudwest, any free space we can find that we can plant. So we're doing pretty well. And I know the city's goal is 50,000 trees a year.
Wow.
And last year they got 42,000.
Wow.
So it's a lot, you know, but again, and it's costly. It's costly to get the saplings and to get as many as you need and then to find the space. But as long as we're conserving green space and planting more, I think we'll be in good hands. And one of the places I'm really excited about that nobody talks about is the Turcotte Yards.
Right.
Right next to where we all redid the Turcotte Interchange
right.
in the
and
20.
I drive by it all the time and I see all the trees that are planted there and... Yeah,
there's a ton planted there. And then if you're on the south side of the highway, which you might miss because it's a kind of a butte, there's a whole space. It's vast. It looks like lunar landscape. It's ugly. All of that's going to be a park, though.
Nice.
So Montreal is going to have this big sort of central park there, which is an amazing place to plant. So I'm sure we're going to see a lot of microforest in that area. And you know, we have lots of amazing landscape architects and arboricultural engineers that think about how we can, you know, support local types of growths and local types of animals and insects in Montreal. So there's often now a lot of thought behind it, and it's really intelligent thought. So I'm really excited about that space. That's going to be a big green space.
Nice. And is it still true? I remember if you were a nonprofit organization, you would be able to get a tax break. Is that true? If you're renting a space in Montreal,
Sure. There are certain. Montreal's taxation. Let's put it this way: cities' taxation policies in Quebec are really designed by Quebec, so we have to fit within certain rules that they give us, right?
Right.
Which is super frustrating,
right?
Sometimes groups don't have tax exempt status from city taxes, but we can donate another way to sort of make up for
right.
it, you know, which
right.
is often things go. Like, I can't say, oh, I love the St. Columba House so much, so when
right.
they're going to do their street party and, you know, and they don't have to pay a permit, they
right.
still
right.
have to pay the permit.
Right.
I'm not
of
allowed
course.
To give it to them free, but
right.
we could, in exchange, give them a donation for the same price that the permit costs.
Right.
And, you know, those
right.
are those are some
stuff
initiatives
like that.
That we do. And I know, like, churches weren't taxed forever and religious
right.
institutions. So
right.
That's, again, in Quebec law. And so we'll see if that maybe... that changes too, but again, you know, a lot of these buildings are close to closing right now, and they're also our heritage, you know, like architecturally speaking. I think churches are really pretty. I think a lot of religious buildings are pretty around the world. So I would like to make sure there's plans as well, though, if they're going to get taxed all of a sudden, because I don't want them all coming down either.
For sure.
Absolutely. And I guess what we're basically out of time, I guess.
Rich conversation.
That's it. That's so. It. It's been great to chat with you, Craig, and you know, you're doing great work out there for your residents and for the city at large. So keep up the great work, and love to have you on the show again sometime. Yeah,
I'd say the same thing for you. You're doing great work out in St. Anne's, and we appreciate having good green allies in the West Island like yourself. So keep up the good work, and thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Craig. So we've been talking to Craig Sauvé, who is a councillor in the Sud West Borough. And his district is the Saint-Henri-Est-Petit-Bourgogne-Pointe-Saint-Charles-Griffintown district. And you can easily contact him by going to his page for his being a Montreal City Councillor. But his email is craig.sauvé@montreal.ca. And his borough office is on Rue Bel Air. And he's not always available, but
I'm very very easily reachable on it. All the social media too, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, all of it. You can write me anywhere you want. It's my pleasure to get in touch.
Perfect, perfect. So we'll maybe leave some music now. We'll leave you with some music. I think I'm going to play a song by George Harrison from the Beatles. And, you know, he had one of these solo albums where he had this cute little song about saving the earth. So we'll leave you with that. And you can always follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/EcoLibriumCKUT Montreal. You can hear this show and other shows by going to our archives on the CKUT website, which is ckut.ca. Just look for programming and archives and find us, our show, Ecolibrium, in the schedule and click on that. And it opens a window where you can listen to past shows. And if you ever want to email us, you can email us at ecolibrium@ckut.ca. My name is Ryan Young. Have a great rest of your day. We gotta save.